Hello and welcome to the Help Me Understand podcast. Help Me Understand is a weekly podcast that explores the context behind the things that we experience from day to day, with topics ranging from personal development to parenting to health and fitness and more. Join me, your host, JK McLeod, as I share my thoughts and also host conversations that are meant to encourage you to say, help me understand, in an effort to add perspective to the things we experience in everyday life. All right, what is up, folks? Welcome back to another episode of the Help Me Understand podcast. I'm your host, JK, and today I am joined by a very special guest. I'm joined by Maria. Maria is, and I already am thinking, man, I'm not going to be able to catch everything. However, I'll just go with the first three things that come to mind that I'm aware of. And then as you all listen to this conversation, you're going to find out that she's not just these things. She's so much more. There's a lot of layers to Maria. So Maria is a nutrition coach, also a personal trainer, also a writer and author, which we're definitely going to get into today. So first, Maria, I just wanted to start off by just asking you, how are you today? How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I've had a pretty mellow morning. I didn't go train, which I usually do early morning or an 8:30. So I'm doing an afternoon training session, which is a little different for me. Ooh. But I adapt and I move along with the schedule. I'm a mom, so I have to always adapt or die.
There's so much of parenting that's like on the fly. You're just gonna figure it out as you go, right?
Yep. The more you become more fluid and just like let go, and that's difficult for, you know, maybe we'll get into that. Just I'm a recovering control freak and perfectionist. Ooh. Parenting will definitely wipe that out from you eventually.
Gotcha. Well, I appreciate you being able to take the time. And if our recording time factored into that adjustment, I'd appreciate you even more for that. So thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Especially, I'm going to say thank you also with that from the perspective of someone myself who tends to be very regimented when it comes to training. And I'm very, let's say protective is the nice way to say it. I'm very protective. Absolutely. of my training time.
I would agree. We have to be. Even more so as parents.
Yeah. Speaking of training, we're just going to roll right into things. Speaking of training, you are, correct me if I'm wrong, you're in prep right now, aren't you?
Or I am not in prep.
No.
So I did my first bodybuilding show in 2022. And so that was my last prep from January to June when I got on stage in 2022. And so post this, it's been improving my physique and just really becoming the hybrid athlete that I sort of envisioned when I left cross training and CrossFit straight into bodybuilding and straight into the show, which was very interesting how that happened. But it was perfect timing. But I went from like one side of the pendulum to another, and performance based for so long to then just physique based. And so, I'm not at current. Everybody asked me, when are you getting on stage again? And when I got off stage, I said, I don't know if I'll ever get on stage again. I just felt like that was my time. It wasn't something that I was saying I was going to become or adapt this sport into my life. It was just like this perfect set of circumstances that led me to the stage, like inside of me, in my career, in my personal life. It just all came about where I knew it was right. And I actually started the prep with my coach, which I hired on, a well-known bodybuilding coach. He has the Olympians, which was amazing. And he's local. And somebody recommended me to him, was that I just want to do the prep, but no stage. So he actually took me on as a client with prep, but not getting on stage. So I was going to prep like a bodybuilder that was getting on stage, but never get on stage. And, you know, that's how I felt. That's what I felt was right for me when I first started the prep. Yeah. But as it progressed, I had a girlfriend that was doing it at the same time, coincidentally, I recommended. And she said, you are 4 weeks away from a show. You need to get on stage. You will look back and regret it. And then at that point I said, yeah, I got it. I know what's in. And I hired like my posing coach. I bought my bikini and I committed to the show. So Yeah.
Wait, four weeks out?
You committed? About like, yeah, oh, I want to say a little bit more.
Or
like
somewhere around there.
6 weeks out okay. to the stage where I picked a show and I said, I'm going to get on stage. Yeah. So I was pretty prepped by then. And it would be the last 4 to 6 weeks where you get stage ready.
Right.
You know, where that's like where it gets a little bit more intensified.
Yeah.
And I started saying, okay, I need to start posing. That was probably the first
thing. Yeah, that's the part that jumped out. That's the part of what you just talked about that jumped out to me. And, you know, to most who are more like, we'll call them like gen pop or general like lifestyle based folks that may be listening, what may jump out to them is, oh man, like the diet and the training, you had to get that off. You know, you had to really tighten that up, I guess, for lack of a better way to say it, really tighten that up and really kind of bear down that last 4 to 6 weeks. To me, the posing part is what jumps out with, okay, so you're giving yourself like less than 2 months to be stage ready from a posing standpoint.
So I knew it was something that I was unfamiliar with. However, I love heels. I have felt like I haven't used heels so much in California and as a mom, but I just said, and then those heels are a whole different category, but actually they surprised me so much. They're so comfortable, the balance on them. And I was shocked on how much I enjoyed the posing part. It was like this feminine side came out that I have a background of like growing up and dancing salsa, merengue, bachata, growing up Latina.
Okay.
And so we danced with heels. And so it kind of like pulled that side of me out. And I was loving it because for so long I was like the lift heavy, like I'm tough, like just as strong, like everything was rigid form. Where then this then said, do you remember that flow that just, and it just brought that back, that side. And then it just sparked something in me. And I was like, I got this. Like it was dancing. So you had to learn specific things. And then it used my athleticism, which was, you know, keep posture, keep that right position and that strength pose within that femininity. So the combination was just fire for me. And I got on there and I just would ask my coach, if you know I'm going to be competitive, I want to be a first-time competitive athlete. I'm not doing this for fun. I won't get on stage unless you know I'm competitive. So that was my only requirement.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna back the car up just a little bit here because we said before we hit record we could go in a lot of different directions.
Yes. And
I had even told you I know this conversation is going to flow. Like I'm not worried about trying to put together any sort of a structure. If anything, I'm going to try to. As my grandfather used to say, "Keep it in the road." I'm going to try. So. Okay. Let's go back a bit and let me ask you about earliest memories of fitness athletics being introduced into your life. And I'm asking that from the context of for those who will hopefully take time to, you know, listen to this and then possibly, you know, like connect with you via your social media. And your Substack and like your writing and different things like that, I would not be shocked if at first they put together some sort of story of where what they think your background is, what you've always been into, and what may or may not have always come naturally and all this stuff. And as I was mentioning to you when I reached out to ask you if you would be willing to come on, I always find that there's way more to the story. And way more context than people really kind of understand what it takes to get to where someone currently is and to keep them going. So with all of that long drawn out rambling, I wanted to ask, can you talk to me a bit about your first memories of introduction into athletics, performance, fitness, that whole umbrella? Where did that first begin for you?
Yes. My first memory was in school. Failing terribly at every sport and every athletic thing possible. Like just, you name it, like steal the bacon, like Red Rover, you know, elementary school back in the 80s and just always feeling the weakest, maybe the slowest, just not enjoying it. I mean, that's elementary school. And I did no organized sports because I grew up with a father who was not into sports at all, watching or playing, never did.
Okay.
He was into agricultural reading, writing, history, documentaries, philosophy, the scriptures. That was my dad.
Okay.
And so I grew up, and then sci-fi movies and things like that. And then a very artistic, artsy mom. so no sports whatsoever in any level. I mean, we did not even play as like a family, like let's go play volleyball or let's go. And I grew up in New York City. That's another thing too. Concrete city, you know, the concrete jungle. You had local parks, but not big grass parks where you go as a family and go play in the grass.
Wide open spaces.
Yeah, no wide open spaces. Okay. The weather was not always the best to be outside. Lots of rain, cold, you know, so the East Coast weather. And then if you didn't play indoor organized sports, you didn't really have that opportunity. Yes, we got on bikes and scooters and played tag outside and did things like that as a kid in the front, you know, up the block with neighbors. So that was just, we just did that. Anything, we kicked a ball around as, you know, my siblings or the kids up the block, that was it. And then in school, it was whatever the school was introducing as a sport. So right now we're learning basketball. Right now we're learning volleyball. But I just felt so inadequate. I was short, as little, and just could not hit a ball, was afraid of a ball. Everything. And then all the physical fitness tests, I dreaded the day the physical fitness tests arrived. The 1 mile run, the sit-ups, the pull-ups in front of everyone.
Yeah, the like sit just, and reach and all that stuff.
Yeah. And yeah, I just,
I totally know what you're talking about.
All those tests, I think, seared in my mind how terrible I was at that. And I think that was the origin of me wanting to then be better at it eventually. Then it was just like an identifying, wanting to identify as an athletic person, as someone that is strong, as someone that can do these things later on down the road. Because it just really wasn't part even of my high school experience at all. Our high school was very interesting. It was a small, New York City was creating these new schools. They had large schools, 4,000, 5,000 plus students, the typical high school. And they wanted to then create smaller schools, sort of like charters. They didn't call them charters, but they started creating these smaller schools. And I actually, by our middle school counselor was introduced to this new high school that was opening up in Park Slope, Brooklyn. And it was a small concept school. And so we literally had, I believe it was 47 seniors graduating by the time I was a senior.
Oh, really?
Very, very small and intimate school. We didn't have organized sports because of that, very little. And then PE was an option. And who do you think opted out of PE?
Yeah, you're like, yes, please.
I was like, middle school was a nightmare. I will do anything else. I'll go to the library. I'll volunteer. I'll do anything else. I will skip PE. And so I did opt out of PE, and I hated, again, those physical fitness tests that we had occasionally. So no, I am the least athletic, have no sports background in whatsoever in theory and in practice. And it just, how I came into it was just a slow burn into realizing that I wanted more physically. And I think the beginning of a lot of girls' journey into fitness has to do with their body and their emotions and things like that, that they feel. What, I mean, the 90s was terrible for a girl. It was you have to be really skinny. You know, just, I didn't fit into either the Latina women that I was seeing on TV, you know, voluptuous, and just, I didn't fit into that. And then I didn't fit into the lean white girls. And I was just always in this weird, awkward place physically where I started becoming very aware. And then I grew up in the Latin culture, Dominican, and we're very kind of straightforward. And so I would have aunts that would comment on my body from an early age if I was like a little bit too, you know, fluffy, or if you get too skinny, they have comments, you know. And so as a young girl, hearing this from a family, you just start becoming aware of your body, and you just start like, well, what's wrong with my body? And then obviously I think, you know, we didn't have, thank goodness, TikTok and Instagram, all these things nowadays, but we had billboards and we had all the magazines, and I grew up with that. So I saw their images, and as a girl, we compare ourselves. We start to say, you know, and then feeling inadequate in like things that I was trying to achieve, like, this level of inadequacy physically, you know, not looking how I thought I should look, not fitting this one mold where I can fully identify with, you know, all these things started to kind of create this combination of things. But, you know, I had a good foundation with my family. I knew they loved me, you know, and having that strong identity and that foundation, I knew I had parents that loved me, held me, you know, pushed me through a lot of like not doing anything extreme and not ever going somewhere like too far off. Like I was centered enough to always know, wait, like, why are you feeling like this? Like, why are you thinking like this? And just always asking. So I was an overthinker. So, you know, I labeled myself as an analyzer.
Okay.
I'm super analytical. Yeah. I can analyze you. And by the time I was 14, I knew I wanted to study psychology. So by the time I was a freshman in high school, I knew that was my path, was to understand humans in the psychological way and the emotional way. And so I became kind of obsessed with understanding that and understanding relationships. So I would always question everything. Yeah.
Wow.
I know I went a lot of places there and I can.
You're among friends here. Like this is, this is what we do here is we peel back layers. We get context. Yes. We dig deep. Rambles are welcome here. I mean, I'm fluent in those. Trust me, there's really the most difficult thing is just trying to figure out like how many different directions I want to go in with that. Cause there's a lot of different pieces to that you bring up that I think are so relatable in so many different aspects, whether we're talking about, you know, for me, totally relatable when it comes to that experience with growing up and not identifying as being very athletic or sporty, or anything like that. The challenge for myself was that I was actually just talking to my son when I was dropping him off at school this morning about this. I'm about 6'2", and I've been about 6 feet tall since I was about 13, 14 years old, like right around there.
Yeah.
So people thought, oh, okay, well, there's this tall kid. He must be athletic. And then, you know, they would be sorely disappointed when they would pick me first or second to be on their team based on like how tall I was, and then see that coordination on an athletic field or a court was not my ball game. Strangely enough though, I could dance and jazz choir and show choir and all that stuff, totally all good. But you asked me to do it with a ball and something's not happening. So totally relatable there. So where did you really identify that shift that happened for you where clearly, you know, you're not necessarily coming into this with an established foundation of this massive passion for all things fitness, right? And then now to see where you currently are, where you are a trainer, you are a coach, nutrition is all a part of that also. Like that's a very big part of what you do. I'm not going to say who you are. I'm going to say what you do. It's a very big part of what you do.
Yes.
Where was a point where that shift not began to happen, but where it's almost like, you know, the difference between the car kind of veers into the other lane versus you actually take a right turn? Where can you identify where that happens?
I would say, I became a personal trainer before I became a nutrition coach, which was just out of like practicality for that time period. Later on, this is like now in my like late 30s, but I would say nutrition was probably the first like road that I was heading towards even early on in high school, because I realized, you know, I think I need to feed my body differently. And it was just because maybe if I feed my body differently, my body will change. So it was this interesting thing of like, maybe the way I eat at home, which was homemade meals, but you know, Caribbean, it was Dominican food made by my mom, who was an excellent cook. However, I still, and really not a lot of like junk food, not a lot of processed stuff in the house, but we did have some treats and things, but you hear it, you know, I think it was about my body. I think it led me to say, if I learn about this, I can change my body. you know, I can change. And so I think that was the beginning of like my nutrition, and even just like a small thing that I remember very specific changing was like all the high schoolers would go to the local like little shop down the block from school or something where you get like soda and like chips or something, your favorite snacks.
Yeah, like corner store, remember, bodega type.
Yeah, the deal. Corner store. Yeah. Exactly. Yep. Bodegas, you know, they call it. So you would go and get something, but I remember like they would get chips and I said, well, I'm going to get pretzels because pretzels are better than chips. So like, you know, I started making these little shifts and I'm like, I don't get soda. Let me get a tea, like a lemonade tea. Like, you know, no, yeah. We know nutrition now, but it was just me saying, what is better? What can I do with what I have? And it was always just questioning, what can I do with what I know and what I have in front of me? And it was that constant pursuit of knowledge and then application and doing what I could at the moment. And that was just like the teenage version, Maria, of doing something that I would continuously repeat for the rest of my life, which is ask questions, use what I have at the moment and apply it. Like, what is my circumstance? You know, and the first thing with fitness was gyms didn't, you know, I grew up with like my mom trying Nutrisystem and all these Weight Watchers and all these food service things. And then she would get gym memberships, but it wasn't really popular for a teenager to have a gym membership and then go alone. So I remember my mom had these ankle weights and I started working out in the hallway of our townhome, this little hallway to the bedroom in between the kitchen. And I would do like high knees and like jumping jacks with these ankle weights. So that was probably my first like try of to get fit, you know, alone, to do something to change my body. Cause it was really about changing my body.
Yeah.
But it was also, you know, I read enough at that point about bulimia and anorexia and anything extreme. And I knew in my heart, like, that's not where I wanted to go.
Yeah.
So I just kept searching for answers. So I probably picked up some ideas like, well, you should exercise. Well, you know, there's better foods than this. But yeah. And then having guys comment about my body starting at middle school, you know, not being fully developed, not like looking very young, younger than my age. I was always like mistaken by being younger. That was would think, oh, well, you're not 16. You look like you're 13, you know, when you're 16 or something. And so always looking younger. And I feel like I was just wanted to look my age. And so I got picked, like I, you know, boys made comments about my body. So starting to be realizing like, oh, maybe so there's something wrong with my body and wanting that to change. By the time I was in high school, I was like 115 pounds. And I remember a boy making a comment about my abs or something. Mm-hmm. And like, I got super self-conscious about my abs from that point on.
Oh,
and
okay.
By the time I left high school and I started as a freshman in college, I went from 115 pounds to like 102 pounds. Oh. So,
okay.
Yeah. And I didn't do it like super conscious or knowing what I was doing. I just knew like maybe eat less. I don't know. And I arrived to college really, really petite.
Interesting. Okay. So this is either going to be, there'll either be a question that possibly comes out of this, or it's perhaps like just an observation. Something that's really interesting is how you mentioned, even thinking of those memories of you go to the store and, you know, everybody else is grabbing chips, and the common theme that you and I will hear, especially from clients, is when someone was first becoming aware of wanting to make some changes, especially at a much younger age, what they would turn to is something that was more extreme and involve a lot of restriction. So the way that that story would typically be told, let me not put words in your mouth. In the conversations that I have with people, commonly that story is, we would go to the store and my friends would get chips and I just wouldn't eat anything because there was nothing I could get at the store. Or they would get chips, but I would always grab an apple because I knew that was like healthy for me or quote unquote clean. Mm-hmm. What you shared is I would get pretzels because in my mind that was a better choice than the chips. And again, very relatable. One of the main things that I first got into when I decided to make a change, To your credit, you were doing this when you were a kid. I didn't get into fitness until my early 30s, actually, at all, like in any way, shape, or form. I thought that my big change at the time was I switched from soda to apple juice and orange juice. I was like, I am so healthy right now because I'm no longer getting soda. Like, I'm not drinking Coke anymore. Yeah. I switched over to, like, I was slamming apple juice like it was nobody's business. And I was like, I am the pariah.
Let's go.
I'm like the epitome, not pariah. I'm the epitome of health and fitness right now. So it was just interesting to me that one of the things that you talked about is that thought process of what can I do that's better? And even just thinking about how earlier you had talked about, regardless of kind of whatever things that you were trying, it all seemed to go back to you weren't going to try anything completely like what we'll call extreme and crazy. And you were identifying that your parents gave you kind of like, I would almost call like a center or a foundation to come back to.
Yes.
Anything that you can, this is why I was going to say it. It's, I don't know that it's necessarily a question. It's just, to me, that's a very unique, unique perspective to have. Mm-hmm. And it's one that I feel like can be, I believe I relate to. And also, I've never really, to this point, been able to quite identify or verbalize it very well. Like, my parents are always also extremely faith-centered, like very much so. So there was always just this understanding of certain like values and character traits and beliefs. Whether or not I always followed everything is a whole different conversation. But how, I guess my question would be, in your journey and being able to discern kind of like, well, the, I don't want to quite go down that route because that route's more extreme than I really want to be. How, what is that conversation, if you can recall, like, what does that conversation kind of sound like? Again, because the very common thing that I will hear from folks is my friends were doing this and I wanted to do the exact opposite, not the thing in the middle.
Yeah, I would definitely say the foundation that I felt love from my parents. I knew at the end, even with all their, like what I would say, follies or like shortcomings as a parent, and all the things maybe I still wanted from them and I didn't. And, you know, I had to then reparent that as I got older. I still had this strong identity as their daughter that was loved. And then I had this center to go back. And so I think it was a strong identity base. Like, when you can identify yourself, my dad was very patriotic. He taught us to remember our roots really well. And I think when you identify with something so strong and you know it, it just becomes really part of your, like, your being, and you know where to go when you feel any bit of loss. You can identify with something very strong. And I could identify very early on with a very loving, large, vibrant Dominican family, immigrant family growing up in New York City. So that identity of being Dominican, American, and having a dad that really taught me that love for my roots and also to love the current country that I was living in and to appreciate everything and all the opportunities here. Like, I think took helped me go through a lot of uncertain stages and phases in growing up. And so that was really a strong foundation. And then we were religious. You know, my parents taught us that we come from God and He is our creator and that I am a daughter of God. And so to have that as an identity as well and know that I'm more than just this, there's more than life than just this. And just to have that possibility in my mind that there's more than what I know and I still don't know everything just always made me want to know more and question more and question why I felt that and why I was thinking that and if that was always the best route for me. So I think that personality trait of always wanting to know and understand something, created like this pause between a decision and an action. Like, you know, it's that thought and then there's this space between, right? Where then you get to make a choice. And because maybe I spent a lot of time maybe thinking, you know, and I learned later on that, you know, another phase of my life that maybe I can shorten that thinking span and don't just stay there so long, you know, that overthinker part. and then just become more of a doer. But I spent a lot of time there, you know, as a child. And, you know, even like physically, like later on in life, I had to realize that even my body responded later on with that level of overthinking, that when my daughter was, my oldest, who's going to be 19, was 5 years old, she went into kindergarten and everything was well. She was healthy. I was happy. I was excited. She was starting school. But during that time period, I started clenching my jaw really bad at night. And I couldn't sleep, and I would wake up with extreme excruciating headaches. And I wondered why, because I'm like, I'm good, I'm happy. Like, why am I, what am I stressed? Why am I clenching? And so I started looking into clenching, why people do it. And then though I started praying as well. And I had a specific answer. It was very visionary. And God told me, he showed me in my mind's eye what I look like as a little girl overthinking. And he told me, Maria, you've been doing this for years. You've been thinking so much that you're now your body's responding to that. And so then I said, okay, that's okay. I understand myself now. And so then physically I started understanding, like I started applying relaxation techniques before my bedtime. So I started cleaning up my pre-bedtime hygiene in regards to muscle relaxation techniques. And I cured myself with a little inspiration from God to release control from it and don't stress out and just be like, that was you, Maria. And that's okay. Now your body's responding to all these clenching thoughts that you would have, and you would be clenching your teeth as a little girl and as a teenager, try to analyze everything and find an answer. And that's a response. And that was a great lesson too, because in my nutrition coaching, I was able to use that. And I just said, what underlining things are trapped inside of your cells and in your mind that are then now creating this disease, this part, this thing, right? Because what is disease? It's dis-ease. Your body is not at ease. And some things are so subconscious and have been layering in our bodies and in our cells and in so many ways that they're trapped now and they're showing as disease, you know, whether through choices or subconsciously through our lifestyle, things that we've accumulated as a child and as a teen. And now we have to kind of let go and release.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I really appreciate you sharing that. That's really profound, I think, too, that realization of what I will often call the skill. So if the skill is being able to analyze and really dig deep into things, sometimes it can be what I call an overused skill, where it does become overthinking. And then it's that, you know, what the paralysis by analysis, because you're just like waiting for, well, maybe there's, let me explore this other option. Let me explore this other option before we actually make a decision. So it's like the overused skill. And then it can be the underused skill, where you've got the person who's the exact opposite, where they're, we call them the cowboy, the ready, fire, aim. Like they don't take a minute to just wait, hold on for one moment, like just a moment here, that sort of a thing. So I really appreciate you being able to share that.
Absolutely.
I want to bring it back to your fitness journey for just a moment, and then I want to get into your writing. So when it comes to things within, like underneath the fitness umbrella, as you had alluded to earlier, you've run the gamut. Like you've done performance based, you've done aesthetic based. Can you talk a bit about the different things that you've done? So for instance, I know that you, you've done CrossFit and then bodybuilding. Like what has attracted you to each of those particular modalities? So what do you enjoy about those modalities?
Okay. So even before my CrossFit days and everything, I was doing like boot camps, plyometrics, you know, TV things, T25, you know.
Yeah.
I think the key thing for me was what is right for me right now and what is calling to me. And, you know, I spoke a little bit about motivation and how like we just really are like dumping on motivation. But let me tell you the truth, like, and when we go discipline's it. And I'm just like, you don't understand the power of motivation. Like, if you really understand it, like I was motivated by something, whether negative motivation or positive motivation, which I wanted health, or at some point I wanted to lose a baby weight, or I needed a break, or I hated my body. I used motivation to get me to the next point, right? And I like used it till there was not a drop left, and then it was disciplined by that point. Then I loved it because whatever I was doing at that point was led by something. It was motivated by something. And so I would milk motivation until then it just became part of me. So I milked that baby every time I was motivated, whether I, I need to lose the 10 pounds, I'm motivated. Yeah. And guess what? T25 is calling my name and I'm going to do this for 8 weeks. And I would do it until then I was like, well, I reached a level of like, I've learned everything from there. I'm not motivated anymore. Okay. What else motivates me? Oh, that bootcamp class. Okay. That motivates me. I'm getting in there and I want to learn that new skill. I've never done that. So I would use motivation and I would use it with like what made sense for my personality, my lifestyle and my timing. Yep. And I would just keep adapting because right, movement is movement. And I just knew that's what called to me at that time. I wasn't trying to fit into like what anybody was telling me I should do. I was just like, that calls to me, you know, whether it would have been like running at that time, the first thing, or taking a cycling class, whatever called to me, which in the beginning, I think I was always inclined to weights. So I would love like boot camp and like things that felt like gritty and like tough. You know, I just was naturally inclined to something like that versus very cardio based things. Yeah. But you know, I had phases where I was doing cardio based fitness errors, you know, but I always wanted to like be strong. I always had that natural, again, that was my personality, right? So if your personality is like calling you to like run in the wild, like go run in the wild in the backyard, like go, you know, you live in a forest or something and your soul is calling you to do that. Go run like until you realize, oh, maybe I shouldn't be running so much outside because my knees or something, or you have to like adapt. But motivation was the first thing. And it led me to every single phase of my fitness, which it looked like, I think consistent movement for me happened after I had my daughter. I graduated college in 2003, moved in 2004 to California. A year later in 2005, I had my daughter. And so after seeing the changes in my body, my motivation was, I want my body back. Like what happened? I use that as like, oh my goodness, like I need to start doing something. So I was walking during pregnancy. I worked out a little bit in college at the gym. But then, you know, I had my first daughter and I just realized I'm going to have to feed her for the rest of her life. So I need to get my nutrition in order for me and I need to know how to like feed her. So again, going back to the nutrition thing, I just said, okay, no more orange juice. I always drank orange juice in the morning for many years. And so the first thing I dumped was like,
when
orange juice. I was like, no more orange juice. I kicked it to the curb, only water.
So, oh, wow. Okay.
That was the first thing back in 2005. I had my daughter, no more orange juice, but not buying that anymore. So, you know, I started making these little like adaptations in my nutrition and it always was like nutrition. I don't know. It always, I just felt like that's what you do most of the day. Like the 1 hour that you go move, cool, like move. But then you have to figure out the rest of your day. Like you're putting food in your mouth. So for me, that was, as a thinker, that took more of my brain space than the 1 hour at the gym. You know, or the 1 hour of movement. Brain space was all these hours that I'm cooking, that I have to feed myself, that I drink. And so all these thoughts, I wanted to think less about them. So if that makes sense, I think my whole journey was, and this is what I would tell women when I became a nutrition coach, if I can help you think less about this, and it's a load off your shoulders. Like you're going on vacation. You're not stressing. Like, what am I going to eat? Oh no. Like is this good or is this bad? And constant load that I had for so many years. If I can liberate you from that, you know, when I came across Mike Milner and, you know, Mind Over Macros and like, just, it's really all that. I was just like, this is the thing that's missing in the nutrition world. And the fitness world is understanding your relationship to all this. And if you can get that and like shorten that phase and not live in that cycle for 20, 30 years, the dieting cycle and that mindset, gosh, that's so liberating for a woman. So that is what I want to do. It was like, I say, I want to liberate you. One of the first things I tell women, you're going to spend more time thinking about this for a little while, but then you can think less about it later. Right. So if I can get you to get hyper-focused a little bit and get uncomfortable and get like, oh, I'm stressed out about this, I'm overthinking, it's because you're in the right place to then later on be like, I got this. Like, I'm not even stressing about this. I'm going on vacation. There's a holiday. There's a birthday. I'm not thinking about food. I know how to feed my body. I know how to go grocery shopping. Like, you're thinking less about it. Then you're living. You're finally living, you know? And that's like what I want to give women. So anyway, I had my baby.
Yeah.
I wanted to think about food. I wanted to think of how to feed her. It was the early 2000s, if you don't remember, it was all these fat, which we still have them, like paleo just came out, keto, all these things, yep. You know, all these like names. And I was like, how do I feed my family? Like Dominican's not good enough anymore.
No. Yeah, you that know, definitely like, did not pass like, the, oh, no, the paleo test. You know?
So,
not at all.
So I just started, you know, and that's a whole different conversation on how I, you know, got through all that. And I don't label myself any of those. I just have figured out that there's nutrition, there's goodness in everything. And I take the best that works for my body, my lifestyle, my preference. And all this is evolving, right? The nutrition in the fitness world is a new first world problem issue. Like these are, and it just really is, you know, the gyms are like a first world problem solution. Like who was thinking about that in the 1800s and they're
right.
Like you just farm. Like now we need, you know, we need like, this is a first world problem and we're figuring it out. I mean, fitness is just always vibrant and changing and growing. I mean, it's exciting, but we can't just die over, like we're not going to stress over it. Like apply, learn, and know that's going to adapt. I mean, and do the best you can. Nothing's going to be perfect. So dump perfection.
Oh man. Yeah, so, really, I dig that.
Yeah.
I dig that. I like that.
Yeah. Maybe you want to say something there because I can go into backtrack a little bit and go into like the physical fitness part and how.
No, go ahead. No, go ahead. There. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I mean, I can just, you know, think about I think nutrition was always on my mind and it was the first thing. And then fitness came and it was just a partner. I knew it belonged, you know, one without the other. I just naturally felt like they went together and I had to figure that out. But it was a little bit easier, the fitness thing for me in the sense of like commit to something, like decide something that sounds exciting to you. Right. And just because I'm a sort of like an overachiever type of personality. And you know what? Guess what? Even though I was not athletic, I decided to identify myself as that. I identified myself as an athletic person even before I was. So I was a strong person before I actually was like physically strong to lift. Like a lot of women go into the gym and I coach and I'm just like, you're stronger than you think, but you're not identifying as that. You're just like, no, I don't do that. Like and that's okay. There's another layer to that. Like you might not like heavy lifting, power lifting. Like you might like the lighter rep range. You might like,
yeah,
that's cool. There's no one way, right? But a lot of times we shortchange ourselves because we don't identify something. And so many women don't identify themselves. And they're just like, I'm not that fitness person. I'm not her. Like she must have been, you know, that's her thing. And it's like, then you limit yourself by like, well, what do you want? Do you want to move your body? Well, did the doctor say that you should now because maybe you're pre-diabetic and you should find a solution because we just need movement now. I just said before in the 1800s, you might not have to have thought of movement because you were literally washing your clothes down the river and whatever it was. Like, you know, even my grandparents, Dominican Republic, you just are farming, you're moving, you're just a different lifestyle, right? But now we have to think of focused movement. You have to make it a choice because we are in this modern day and also first world, you know, scenario. So it has to be something you think about. And because if not, you're going to pay for it. And, you know, something I wanted to say about earlier with the extremes, we all come to fitness at some point of extreme, having experimented some form of extreme, whether the extreme of like complete negligence and like, I'll think about that later because I'm young. Right. I'll think about that when I'm aging. And then you realize, oh, I'm 45, I've aged and I can't even keep up with my kids or something. Right. So life through like a violent way can teach you or like softly as we learn, but it's one extreme. Or you were the hyper-focused person. I, you know, was so like, I thought of everything I ate. I didn't eat anything. I was just like this extreme side of like, I exercise 6-7 days a week. I did, you know, the extreme side and just like, then everybody finally figures out the middle and hopefully what I want.
Messy middle, yeah.
Yeah. What I want. Yeah. And I want them to figure it out for themselves and I want it to be sort of shortened. I don't want people to suffer for so long. So, right. If we can kind of close the gap of between any level of extreme and shorten the suffering, whether prevent disease, just feel better in your body, release that stress and all those thoughts in your mind that you're just not living because you're thinking about your body too much, how you look or what you're eating and you don't know which way to go. Like if I could just let's take all that off so you can live. Like, let's live and experience life in your one body that you have in this one beautiful gift of life. And I can just, you can just release all that. It's just, it's a gift. Yeah.
Yeah. I really like that because, and when I say like that, I really like that thought process of encouraging people to really explore and get an understanding of what works for them. And, you know, obviously we're both very familiar with like neurotyping work. Like, I'm guessing, are you a 1B or a 2A? You have to be one of those two.
I'm 1B.
Yeah. Okay. I was like, unless I'm totally off, like, unless I'm completely off my game here, you're one of those two. It was like the achievement level kind of skews a little bit more 1B, the variety, maybe 2A. However, usually, you know, as you know, and for folks that don't know what we're talking about, just look up neurotyping. Jump on neurotypetraining.com, like shameless plug for Pop, the company I work with, and Mike Miller. Yes. Like that'll give you all the information you may ever need. And it's just, you know, usually 2A, it's more like just hopping from something to something, just on a whim, kind of looking for something. It's not very structured, moving from one thing to another thing, versus like a 1B is like hopping from one thing to another because they're like, well, I've mastered that, so I need to move on to something else, versus like I'm bored with that thing. So I think that piece, which again, I think we're both very aligned on, with people getting an understanding of what really works for them and then putting together some sort of a base that they understand are the foundation of where they need to be, and then branch out from there. Because what I hear you really communicating, at least to me, pretty loud and clear, is regardless of different things that you have been involved in, it all still will come back to core values, principles, and structures and beliefs. Like, again, I see this parallel from you talking about, you know, your upbringing, things you were interested in, decisions that you make, and just different paths that you go down. And then even seeing that exhibited in the fitness and nutrition space, some may be on the outside looking in and be like, oh man, that's somebody who's just into so many different things. And if you're not in front of the right person, or if you're not hearing that feedback from somebody who's really in the know, they would label it as unfocused, all over the place, all sorts of things. I'm saying this because I've been given that feedback myself before. They're like, man, you're just into so many different things. Why can't you just focus? I'm like, actually, actually, there's only about 2 to 3 things that I really count on doing each day. And then the rest of the day just kind of goes wherever it goes. You know what I mean? Yeah. So there's actually a lot of structure within all of that variety that you see. So what I want to make sure that I do ask you a bit about is your writing. And even just as recent as just a few hours ago, there was something that you wrote. Or actually, before I get into that, can you talk to us just a little bit about what got you into writing, and just where, what sort of role does that play in your life, your writing?
Yes, I would have to say writing has been something that I've just, when I was little, I made a goal. I said, I want to write a book at some point. And I just said that out to the world, you know, so I've had that desire for a very, very long time. It did get buried from like practicality purposes. You're like, once you're wise enough, you can write something. And so I imagined myself as a wise old lady writing something, you know, like maybe a memoir. So I did have that as a child, but I've been journaling for so long. I started a journal, maybe at like 15, starting with quotes and poems. So I would collect quotes and poems that just spoke to me. And then I did, unfortunately, I wish I kept those. I lost those. But my official career with writing was really journaling. So I've journaled since I was 19. My sister gifted me one with like my name inscribed in it. And that was where consistent writing began. And just, I think writing was an outlet for me to take and dump all this that was there, like constant load. It was like a load. So, yeah, it was a relief for my brain and just all the thoughts. And once I put it on paper, then I was able to process and make choices. And I think that helped me with that space between a stimulus and a decision, because I was always writing. And writing then said, oh, I get what you are feeling now. I get what you meant by that. I get what, okay, there's still the question. And so writing was processing for me, and writing was a form of expression. So in college, by college time, I already knew I loved writing and reading a lot. So I did minor in English. I majored in forensic psychology, because I thought I was going to into the criminal justice world. I think that New York City vibe growing up, like tough girl, was like, yeah, you know, I can help psychology. I can apply my psychology to the criminal justice system. And so that's where I thought I was going. Okay. I wanted to narrow psychology down just a little bit more, because it's so broad. And so I was just inclined to that. So I went for it, and I said, I'm going to major in forensic psychology. And, you know, it's a whole different little story, but I loved it. However, it was still psychology for me, and it was writing and reading during college. And so a lot of writing. And with my writing, it was interesting. All my English professors would say, you're an amazing writer. I did have some issues with, like, I grew up speaking Spanish in the home. So your brain, actually Spanish, a lot of the times is like you say it in reverse. So the same sentence you would say in English, you would say in reverse. So my college professor would be like, okay, like I'm thinking it in English, but then I write it in Spanish. So it wasn't like necessarily grammatically wrong, but it was just interesting to converge these two brains, these two languages, and then, you know, transcribe them into paper and have the level that you want. So, you know, I was an A student for writing in English, and I was with my professors all the time, like right there. Although I just decided during college, like I'm more of an informational writer, authoritative writer than like a creative writer. Anytime I took creative writing, it was such an emotional thing about it that I think I wasn't ready or mature enough to go into that. Like it just felt too vulnerable. Like I can write about a subject. I can write a 10, 15 page, you know, like research paper and feel like really great, or like something that I'm informing someone about or an opinion. But when it came about like just revealing things about myself, it was like a vulnerable space. And I'm just like, I'm not a creative writer. No, I'm not a fiction writer. I'm not a creative writer. So I X'd that out, and I just said, I'm going to be a research writer. Like I can do research and write on the research, right?
Yeah.
So that's where I thought I was taking my writing. But I do have this like very poetic side in me. I do have this thing like so it's a skill that I'm yet to say, like, why did you bury that? Like, you just need to develop it. And so here I am at 42 saying, what really like attracts you is that creative, like philosophical, like passionate, you know, ideas that you write about. And so, yeah, it's a skill that I'm not going to say I don't have right now. It's a skill that you just have to continue to practice. And so, yeah, this led me to writing. And just, I had a recent personal experience where like the divine told me it's time to write. So I said, okay, you do not ignore divine guidance when it comes. And so it literally was a conversation in my mind. Do you have any questions before I maybe share that or something? Or
no, I'm I'm fully like engaged. I'm along for the ride. I'm listening.
Yeah.
Because I'm very aware of, from my perspective, what I think is the power of your writing. So I'm like in the story with you. Like you keep rolling.
Cool.
I'm good.
So I think my recent like coming around 360 with my writing and saying it might be time was, I just felt like I had this thing to say, this message, which after coaching so many women, after being in the fitness world, and after then coming to a realization of like that it was all a return to love. Like when I was able to then fully accept myself, then I could change. And one of the things I would tell my women is like, you have every single right to want to look different. That is absolutely okay. And there's no shame in that, but you can't like negative motivation can only take you so far and it'll only be toxic. So you have to come from it with a deep acceptance of who you are and a deep centeredness of love. And I promise. And then just, you're going to combat these negative things. Like you're going to have bad body image days. And that if once you just don't give yourself judgment for having that and just saying, well, yeah, I just feel like I look terrible. So what? Like, I can breathe, I can move, let's go. I have my family, you know, you have all these other things to rely on other than just how you feel you look that day. Like, I'm just like, now I know I move. Like, look at my daughter's face. Look at, like, I love my dog. Like, you know, there's so many other things that you can just enjoy life about and not get so stuck in there. You know, there was women that just get stuck for 3-4 days on a bad body image day, you know, and just realize like, you're more than that. You're more than your body. And there was these two women that came into my life. One that I don't know personally, but I followed her blog. She was a young mom who had an accident. Her and her husband were celebrating their anniversary, took one of these small little airplanes. He was flying it. They had a terrible accident. They both got lots of burns on their body. And she was really left very, very different, like a full body burns in her face and everything. You know, beautiful by the standards of the world before. And now she had to accept herself as this burned person and identify, yeah, you know, all this journey. And so having her example early on, like in my 30s or late 20s, and seeing that powerful woman love herself and say out loud, I am more than my body, like seared in myself something so deep, saying I'm more than my body. So this whole journey of me going through pregnancies, seeing my body and not being happy all the time, I would always tell myself I'm more than my body. And then I met this beautiful woman. She was, our daughters were the same age, our 19-year-olds, and it was kindergarten, and she had alopecia, and she was this beautiful African-American, gorgeous woman with she was so happy, and she had no hair and no eyebrows, and she would walk with no wigs or anything. And as a woman, to see her beauty shine beyond anything that society could say that she's beautiful, because our hair is so important as women, like our self-esteem a lot of times is like on our hair. And so just to come across this other woman in my life that then showed me I'm more than my body, I'm more than what I look like. And then my ultimate like true identity of knowing that I just am not just this, you know, there's more, there's so much more, solidified in me a desire to always be more than what I look like, but then be okay with wanting that change, be okay with wanting to look good naked, which is, I tell women, I'm like, I'm okay with that. And I shamelessly, like, I don't, you know, I say it with no shame that it's okay to do that, but under the umbrella of never negotiating who we truly are, never negotiating the true person. And so, right, I say, what's the umbrella? Health, disease prevention, integrity, who you really are. And then under that is all the other fun stuff, bodybuilding show, Spartan, like looking good, like getting in those jeans. That those are the fun little things that we're doing this because it should be fun, because we want to get into those jeans. We want to get on that stage, not because I'm negatively pushing myself there. I say it's because of fun and because it brings me joy.
Yeah. So, man, that's so good, because from my observation, many times it can be the inverse where the, you know, being healthy, disease prevention, being able to move in a way that feels good, all that stuff, while that ideally, like that's the covering, right? And then you get all these other things underneath it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that I think as an industry, the voice is becoming louder, and still there's that, I'm going to call it like the fight to have folks make sure that they're not turning it to the inverse where they're like, well, once I look this way, then I'll focus on my health and how well I can actually move my body and having gratitude for being able to pick up something from the ground, like that sort of a thing. So to your point, to a point that you made earlier, though. Oh, you're fine. Yeah. To a point that you made earlier, though, I think that is the beauty of coaching, is getting an understanding for that motivation. If the motivation that the person has at that time when you first interact with them is coming from a place that may be what I'm going to label as superficial, then you work with what you have at the time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's, you know, for me, it might be hitting a soapbox moment here. I don't think it's very helpful to start mm-hmm. off with, well, the reason that you are coming to me isn't deep enough. Like your why mm-hmm. isn't, you know, sustainable enough. So I just want to let you know right off the bat that that's not going to really help. Is that really going to mm-hmm. be the most helpful thing for somebody? Or can you meet somebody where they are? And mm-hmm. those that really understand how to do this will be able to slowly but surely have that person start to recognize like, oh, by the way, as you initially came in and said, like, this was the particular body part you were looking to try and improve. Have you noticed also that you're sleeping better? Have you noticed mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. your energy seems to be more sustainable, that sort of a thing. So that's just what that made me think of too here. So
yeah, a good coach will have you ask those questions of yourself. It just, yeah. you can't go one without the other. A terrible coach will let you stay in a negative motivation space yep. in a very body specific like arena. Like it's just not, it, that can only take you so far. That battery life is so small and so unfruitful and just, we know like once you get into that person's head and you say, don't you want to like move for a long time? Don't you care about disease prevention? Once we have these deeper conversations, most of them do realize that, yeah, of course I care about these things too. Of course I don't want to, you know, right. compromise my health for this. Some people do though, you know, they'll go to that stage. Like I've seen it. I mean, they go to every extreme behavior and I'm like, well, did you learn enough lessons then? When you come and work with me, have you learned enough lessons that you realize it's not in that extreme. It's not in that mindset. It's not in that mentality. Have you hurt yourself enough? Has it hurt, you know, long enough for you to realize? So Ooh. Is the pain good enough? And so if it has, you know, I've had to have those conversations with women and I'm like, some women, a few of them, very rare I've come across, but I'm like, maybe you just need to hurt a little more and you'll realize you'll come across, like you'll just experiment it enough to realize that's not the place. And yes, I'm ready for help and I'm ready yeah. for guidance and I'm ready to get out of this space and find it. And that's the best place to be is when we're stuck and we know we still want growth and then we reach out for it. And then we say, yeah, I need someone who's 10 steps ahead of me to help me walk there and get me those 10 steps where I need to go and where I know I can be. Right. That's what a good Absolutely. Coach does.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And
man. All right. Well,
performance-based. Yeah.
Yes. I'm going to wrap things
up, wrap it up.
By asking you about something that you just shared that I referenced to earlier, just shared it this morning. And I just wanted to see if you would be able to just provide a bit of context behind this. I thought it was very well said. And I think it actually is super relatable to a lot of the things that you have talked about today. So I'm going to read it here. And what you wrote was, the realization that the person you once were was the person you had to be in order to become the person you are makes today the precise place where you need to be. You have everything right now in you to take you to where you want to go. Self-awareness, and then there's an arrow to self-acceptance, goes to growth and change. Mm-hmm. Can you share with us what your thoughts were behind that as we, I want to be respectful mm-hmm. of your time as we start to kind of wrap here.
Yeah, absolutely. And please, I'm going to be respectful of your time as well. Because this is, I always tell people, I can talk about this stuff forever. I love it. It's my passion.
Yeah, it's good.
But yeah, so I wrote that this morning and I've loved Threads, by the way, because I could just write things that come in my mind. And it's just like the perfect platform for like a coming to age like writer or something.
Yeah.
Like just put your thoughts out there. Who cares if anybody reads it or not? But yeah, so I think this is just really sums up where I'm at right now at 42 is realizing that I lacked nothing. There was nothing that you lacked today, that you lacked back then, that you were missing, that there was nothing. It was perfect. Exactly what life brought to you, the circumstances that you were in, everything that you faced was the absolute perfect chemistry to create who you are right now, to give you the opportunities, to give you the pain points, the beauty points, everything that you had to be an experience. Like, don't regret the past. Don't wish, like, I could sit here and say, I wish I, you know, started bodybuilding when I was 20 versus 42. I'd be so ahead, right? It's a concept of like, you are where you're supposed to be, exactly where you are. And you have everything in you to be the person that you want to be. That longing, because we all have this deep inside longing that we're meant for greatness. We're meant for something else. There's a mission, there's a call. And that pull to that call of greatness and to level up is just, it's an innate God-given thing that I feel that. And so when you feel like less than, it's just that call to that your inner desire to be more. And more means just going for who you truly are, the essence of you. And so when you realize that, that person, like, you'll forgive that person, like, whatever you did, whether it was a painful past or choices or people did things to you or circumstances that you felt were less than fair, that you realize that's exactly the everything you needed, all the ingredients to be who you are. And you are unique and you are valued. And it's like that message that you shared that resonated with me, your podcast, that you have gifts that the world, that you can only give. And the more I get older, the more I realize that is so true. These things might sound so trite and so said over and over, but it is a return to that. In essence, you will learn that it is a return to loving, to love, which you are love. And that love is not a means to an end. It is the end. We are it. And that's it. And so once you realize there's, you're lacking nothing, but at the same time, then you can grow, right? It's like when God says, I love you exactly how you are, but I love you enough to not leave you that way, right? So love yourself enough to not want to stay that way. But where's the precursor? Where's the origin of that? It's love. So yeah. I think that was the thing.
Well said. Yeah, well said. And I really appreciate being able to basically what I'm going to call kind of get the behind the scenes of what that writing was all about. So I do really appreciate you taking the time to sit down and have this conversation. I had a strong feeling going into this that there was going to be a lot that we could really kind of peel the layers of, and that it would open up other pieces that we could definitely get into. However, what I'm going to do is strongly encourage anybody who's listening here to connect with you. So what is the best way or ways, methods for people to be able to connect with you, your writing, all that stuff? Yeah. What's the best way to do that?
I think right now my strongest presence is Instagram. And so it's g.maria.delgaiso, I believe.
Maybe yeah, you can I'll put it in the show notes. I'll put it in the show notes.
You probably won't even remember my name anyway. But that's where I'm most active right now. And I am writing tidbits in Threads. So that's like another app from Instagram. And so you'll see some of my writing there, and I do share on Instagram. However, I am currently in a project right now that I want to finish. It's one of my 2024 goals, and that will be probably shared throughout the year and then finalized hopefully by the end of the year. So I have some more things going on. So you'll see me on Instagram, follow me, and then you can stay, like, I'll keep you updated to like where I'm heading with my writing, if that interests you. And then just any like mindset stuff. And I do still post some fitness videos or just things about my life. So, yeah.
All right. Well, Maria, thank you so much again for taking the time to sit down and have this conversation. I really appreciate it. And for those again, who'd be interested in engaging and just connecting to get an understanding or just consume more of Maria's content, which I will tell you, especially from a Threads perspective, because I say this just personally, as I'm someone who's trying to steer more towards like writings and pieces and articles and different things like that. That's one of the things that I've kind of enjoyed about Threads is I am one of those people, like, every now and then I'll do purposeful scrolling. Like, I actually like set aside 5 minutes to scroll. Otherwise, I think I'm going to waste some time later on. And Threads has been one of those spots where it's like not as much photo driven and different things like that. Nothing wrong with photos by any means. Yeah. It's just, it's not as much driven by that. I think it's to me, it's just interesting because I think it's much more of getting an understanding or at least just viewing someone's stream of consciousness as it's kind of coming. And some of it, you know, some of it's deeper than other things that some people may post, but it's a nice break from just like a ton of like the overstimulation of like video and reels and different things like that.
I agree.
So it's provided for me, it's provided a nice harmony. So I do encourage you guys to reach out and check that out. So with that, we are going to wrap up this episode. So for those of you who've stuck around to the end here, thank you for listening to another episode of the Help Me Understand podcast. Take care, and I'll catch you next time.